Good evening and welcome. It's KBC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Tonight, I'll be speaking with Rebecca Ward about the 104th National Orange Show Fair coming up soon, May 1st through the 5th. We'll hear about music and food and beer competitions, the parade, a petting zoo, a circus, and more. Coming to the Lewis Family Playhouse in Rancho Cucamonga soon, an adaptation of Hans Christian Andersen's The Emperor's Nightingale, set in the early part of the 18th century. I spoke with Murray Heppner. To start, the San Bernardino Valley College Theater Arts Department presents James and the Giant Peach, May 2nd through the 5th. The original story is by Roald Dahl, author of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, so with that said, it may be no surprise that it falls a bit on the darker side of things. I spoke recently with James himself, a.k.a. San Bernardino Valley College theater student Daniel Jimenez.
Yeah, it begins with James' parents getting run over by a rhinoceros.
Okay.
And after that, he gets sent to live with his aunts, who are really mean people. And they actually beat James and treat him like an insect. And one summer day, James is just outside doing work that the aunts make him do. And an old man comes around and he offers him a bag of green things.
Green things?
Yeah, just green things.
Okay.
Little tiny green things. And he takes the bag and, you know, James, he's a kid, he's clumsy. He drops the things and he drops it in front of the peach tree. Then later on, they find out there's a peach on the tree that's never had a fruit on it. And the peach starts growing and growing and growing until there's a giant peach in the yard. And then later on, when James gets sent to clean around the peach, he discovers there's a hole inside the peach and he goes inside. And when he goes inside, he gets scared by giant insects that live inside the peach. There's a giant centipede, a giant spider, giant glowworm, and an earthworm, and a silkworm, and a green grasshopper, and that's all the animals.
Going back just a second about this bag full of green things, do we ever really know what they are? They just, I guess it's implied that they're magic of some sort.
He never mentions what the green things are. At first, I thought they were beans because of the other fairy tale, they're usually beans.
The Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah.
Yeah, soundingly, yeah.
But in the script, James says that they're burrowing into the ground and beans don't go in the ground and move around. Yeah.
Okay. Now, just so we understand this, the peach that we're talking about, you said that it gets giant, big enough for James himself, a human-sized child, to walk inside this peach. Doesn't it even get so big that he not only goes inside a peach, but inside of one of the seeds of the peach?
Yeah, actually, he goes inside the stone of the peach. That's what it says in the script.
Okay, gotcha. The stone inside there. So these insects, they're scary at first, but he becomes friends with some of them, right? I mean, talk to me about some of the friendships that he develops with some of these insects.
So he's scared at them first because they're giant insects.
Yeah.
I would be scared too.
Yeah.
But then later on in the story, he finds out they're pretty much alike. They're all insects, and him himself is treated like an insect by his aunts. So he relates to them a lot. And I think the first friend he makes in there, I think it's the ladybug.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, I think, more of a mother figure.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
He was taken away from his parents in a way, or his parents were taken away from him. And then living with the ants. Now, something that I noticed, and I don't know if this is right in the script or if this is just something for other people to notice on their own, all of his friends, these ladybugs, the glowworm, the silkworm, did you mention, I believe, the centipede, all of these are friends, but there are no ants. That is A-N-T-S. And this has got to be a reflection, I would think, on his aunts, A-U-N-T-S. Is that actually explained, or is that just something that we pick up on as actors or audience members?
I never realized how close aunts and aunts are.
Oh, you grew up saying aunt, probably. Oh, okay, so, yeah, I grew up saying aunt, no matter whether it was A-N-T-S or A-U-N-T-S. I'm curious about that. It would not be a surprise. At some point, once he's inside the peach, and he becomes friends with all these creatures. At some point, the peach starts to move, and it goes other places. Can you tell me about this? First of all, doesn't it roll over his aunts?
Yeah, so when he meets the insects, the centipede actually goes up into the stem and bites off the stem.
Ah.
And that causes the peach to roll, and then the peach actually crushes the aunts. And
I'm laughing about this, but they're mean ants, so
yeah,
it's okay.
It's okay. It rolls. The peach just rolls and rolls and rolls all over England, or like the hill that they live. And it just keeps rolling until it just splashes inside the water.
And then I believe I did read a little bit about the play. Doesn't the peach at some point go into the air and travel across the ocean that way? Is that part of the story as far as in the play?
Yes.
How is it presented as far as the audience members looking at the set with James inside this giant peach? Describe for us what the audience is seeing.
Well, the play actually, how we're doing it, it has projections on the sides. And what causes them to actually fly the peach is that there are sharks coming into the peach to eat it.
Oh, gosh.
And James gets the genius idea to use seagulls to lift the peach up out of the water.
Ah, okay.
And then to represent the seagulls, there's some strings that we tie to the stem of the peach.
Okay, wow. So this covers the part of the story where the peach goes airborne. And now we do have some characters during this part of the story. They are the Cloud Men, I believe, is what they're called in the story. Is this the same for in the play? I believe they're throwing rain and hail and who knows what. Talk to me about this part of the story then, as they go across over the ocean.
We have all the rest of the cast that's not inside the peach. They're actually Cloud Men. And we have hailstones that are puffy balls so we don't get hurt.
Oh, okay, nice.
And during that part of the play, Zen and Pete gets them mad and they start throwing the hailstone at us.
I guess we can talk about this part of the story. It's not like we're giving spoiler alerts. James, the centipede, and all of his friends in New York, it seems like everybody is against them. Don't they have the army and the police and all these kinds of people? They're ready to fire missiles at them and shoot their guns at them. And talk to me about this part of the story, because, like I said, I haven't read it yet. So tell me what's going on here. Why is everybody upset with James and his friends?
Actually, in this story, James is there and the insects are seen as heroes, who actually sees them as a threat is the English themselves. Because they're part of the story when they get lifted up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
The Queen Mary, the ship,
mm-hmm.
spots them and they think it's a weapon that they're going to use against the English.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. The part that happens in New York, does that still happen with the police and all that? So tell me about that portion. So then once they're in New York, what's going on at this part of the story?
So once they land in New York, they're loved by everyone. They see them as heroes and everybody just wants to meet them all.
Wow. Okay. So it's a very, very happy ending.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. There's a lot of these. I mean, even though we started off talking about it as a dark play with, you know, maybe scary elements, and I suppose there are, but there is a happy ending. Do you think this play is for children, or do you think it's for adults, or maybe it's one of those shows that it's for adults, but kids can enjoy? What do you think?
I think this play is really family-oriented. It has some dark stuff in it, but kids won't understand. And the characters, they're really fun and really cartoonish, and that the kids would like that kind of stuff.
And Daniel, you play James, and James remains a human being throughout the show. But the insects, are they wearing costumes, or is it done through makeup, or how is it that we see them as insects?
There's parts of their costumes that show that they're insects. Like, Earthworm has a pretty nice costume. It's all pink, and he has a big tail and a hat.
Nice.
Also, the way they move, like Centipede, he kind of like zigzags along like
a centipede. Oh, sure, like slithering, almost like a snake or something. Nice, okay.
And Grasshopper kind of stomps like he was like an actual grasshopper.
Excellent, cool. And you are a theater student here at Valley College.
Yes.
What got you interested in theater?
When I was younger, my mom said I'm really dramatic and I should do acting. And my senior year of high school, I was done with sports. I didn't want to do sports anymore. So I was like, I'm going to check out theater. And I did Alice in Wonderland. And
cool.
I was the caterpillar.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. It's the first thing that I thought of, by the way, as you were describing this other caterpillar. I thought of Alice in Wonderland. That's a nice role to go into, your first one. And now as far as here on the campus of San Bernardino Valley College, weren't you also in a fairly recent show?
In the Heights.
In the Heights. And what were you in the Heights?
I was ensemble.
Ensemble, okay.
Dancing and singing, it was pretty fun.
You entered the world of theater with kind of a prominent role, and then eventually you played in the chorus in the background.
Yeah.
Nice, okay, cool. Well, as far as what else is going on currently or maybe in the near future, what are some roles that you would like to do someday? You know, every actor has, I guess it's a bucket list, you know, what they have to do someday. Can you name a role or two that you just would like to do?
Actually, I'm a simple guy. I want to be ensemble for a couple of musicals. The Book of Mormon, that's really fun.
Yeah.
I want to do Hamilton, too.
Oh, yeah.
And I also really like Dear Evan Hansen. That was really nice.
You're not wanting to be the lead actor. You're not wanting to be center stage. You're quite happy being a part of the chorus.
Yes.
Why is that, do you think, that you like to be in the chorus as opposed to out front?
When you're out front, you're always on stage. And personally, I feel like I have more fun because I get to dance and sing and just be me, put part of me in a character that probably people won't notice, but if they do, they're like, oh, that was pretty nice.
Nice. Daniel, I can't thank you enough. I appreciate you coming in for this. And again, the dates for James and the Giant Peach?
May 2nd, the 3rd, the 4th at 7 p.m. And the 5th is at 2 p.m. at the auditorium at San Bernardino Valley College.
That was Daniel Jimenez playing the part of James in James and the Giant Peach. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Later in the program, we'll hear from Murray Heppner about an adaptation of Hans Christian Andersen's The Emperor's Nightingale, set in the early part of 18th century China. That'll be at the Lewis Family Playhouse in Rancho Cucamonga soon. First, though, the 104th National Orange Show Fair is coming up soon, May 1st through the 5th. There are a variety of events going on throughout the fair, and we'll hear about a lot of them. But there are some events which are day-specific, including something called I Create. I spoke with Rebecca Ward, organizer.
So the San Bernardino City Unified School District has a CAPS program that has this I Create festival that they're going to have at the National Orange Show Fair. It has everything from music to science to engineering to math problems. And so they come together and they create different tables from different schools with different subjects that they're going to display.
Almost like a science fair?
Yep, like an overblown science fair.
Okay, well.
It'll be really cool.
Except it goes beyond the science. There's
correct.
The rest of the letters with STEAM.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the featured item on Wednesday. We sort of have a featured item on each of the days, but then there's other things that are going on throughout the fair, yeah?
Correct. So each of our featured days is going to be located inside the Orange Pavilion building. Wednesday is going to be I Create. Thursday, we're going to have our Military Appreciation Dinner. Friday will be our Brew Fest. Saturday is going to be National Orange Show's Got Talent. And Sunday will be our annual car show.
Okay, well, let's break this down a little bit more and address that a little bit further. The Military Appreciation Dinner. What, where, who? This is active duty. This is, tell me
active,
all about this.
Active, reserved, veterans, all branches are invited as well. It's a free dinner. Doors will open at 4 o'clock or 1600. And it's just a nice way to say thank you. We're going to have San Bernardino Valley College Voci Soli going to be performing, as well as the Arnie Newman Band will be performing, as well as some of our entertainment. And then after the dinner, we welcome our guests to come and enjoy the fair.
Voci Soli, this is a vocal group, Maddie Scully's group?
Maddie Scully's okay. Advanced Choir on campus. Yeah.
Okay. And then the other group?
The Arnie Newman Band is a local country band.
Okay, country. Okay, okay. And this is going to be on Thursday?
Correct.
Okay. So then Friday, there's the Brew Fest. Let's talk about what the Brew Fest is. There's also going to be music, right?
There is. There'll be live entertainment. We're going to have Sweet Mischief is going to be the headliner. They are going to be playing for about 2 hours, and then there's different brew tastings. There'll be some judges there as well, and some different prizes that the different breweries can win.
So these are various breweries, I guess, throughout the Inland Empire or
correct.
California?
So, all throughout the Inland Empire.
And so that's the big thing on Friday then. You mentioned National Orange Show's Got Talent.
Yes. We just had auditions, and we announced our top finalists. There's 8 finalists. And so they're going to be performing 1:30 inside of the Orange Pavilion building. The winner will get to perform a longer act on our main stage that same night.
Were there parameters set on what type of talent presented here? We have bands. Did we have singers? Did we have some tap dancers?
We had all kinds of goodness. So San Bernardino has a lot of talent. We had everything from singers to dancers to different musicians, and even a comedian came out.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So we're excited to see what's going to happen.
What's made it into the running so far?
We have a couple different singers. We have a few musicians that will be performing, as well as a dancer and our comedian.
And then these are all a second round, I suppose, when
correct.
They perform. And then there will be a winner from this, and then they will perform yet again during the course of the fair?
Yes. That will be the same day, but it'll start off our evening's events over on the main stage at 4 o'clock.
Okay. Now, that is Saturday, I guess, going into the afternoon, but there's also a parade on Saturday, yeah?
There is. Okay. There's a parade that kicks off at 2 o'clock. We're going to have several different entries from San Bernardino Valley College. We have the San Bernardino Symphony is going to be there. KVCR will be there.
Yay.
We're going to have the FNX Bear out. The Pace Setters are going to be out. The Multicultural Dance Center will also have a float in the parade as well.
The Pace Setters?
The Pace Setters, yes. So the Pace Setters is a drill team and drumline that's okay. local here to San Bernardino.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. And I think last year we were all in Corvettes. Is that going to be this year as well? Do you know yet?
We don't officially know yet, but we will have some Corvettes as well as some Model T and Model A cars.
Oh, cool. Nice. And what time does the parade kick off?
It kicks off at 2 o'clock, and it will start inside of Valley Land.
So then on Sunday, we've got one more of the big items, if you will. And this is a cool one. This should draw people from wherever.
Definitely. So Sunday, we're going to have a car show inside of the Orange Pavilion. So the cars will actually get to drive in, park, and hang out so people can come, enjoy, have a drink, have their snacks, and look at the different vehicles.
Nice. And so now we've covered the big items, if you will, for Wednesday through Sunday, through the entirety of the National Orange Show. So let's talk about some of the daily items, though, because there's a lot of great stuff happening every day. It's as if you're going to any other fair or carnival or whatever. I want to hear, first of all, about stingrays, a petting zoo. Okay, so let's go there first.
So every year we invite our turkey races, our pig races. We have a petting zoo. We're going to have some livestock. We have a program called Wild About Science that's going to be inside of our citrus building. And this year we have stingrays that anyone can come and feed and pet them. And it feels kind of like a squishy marshmallow to pet them. It's a lot of fun. We also have Brad's World of Reptiles will be there and our lorikeet exhibit that is huge every year and everyone wants to come see them.
You mentioned turkey and pig races.
Yeah.
Okay, is this what I imagine it? I mean, you know, start to finish.
There's a start to finish. And usually, like with our turkey races, there's a little truck with food in the back, little like a RC car.
Okay.
And there's someone that is controlling it and it makes them go around a track and the birds try to go catch all the food.
And so really it's dangling a carrot in front of something.
Yes,
and they're chasing after the okay.
But it's a lot of fun and the that kids get to fun. Pick their favorite turkey to root for and they all have, you know, different names and so you hear the kids yelling out the different names and it's a lot of fun. it's really cute.
So also livestock in the petting zoo, the stingray, fluffy marshmallows.
Yeah, they feel
squishy,
like fluffy
in the water.
Marshmallows. And they're really cool. They have different people there that will explain how to pet a stingray, how to feed a stingray, how to take care of them if you see them in the ocean. The different educational side of it, too, is really neat to experience.
What to do if you see one mm-hmm. coming at you on the sidewalk. Okay. Well, Sunshine Day. What is Sunshine Day, please?
Sunshine Day is our day for our special needs students to participate in, and we have the carnival doesn't turn on any of the strobe lights and other flashy lights. The music is turned down a lot more. Certain vendors will come out and provide different educational material for the students. It's so we can have the fair open for everyone. Everyone should have a chance to experience the fair. And this is just kind of our way of doing it. And we also provide them with a lunch and other little goodies and stuff that they can go home with. And we bring out, you know, the fire truck and the canine unit. So the kids get to also learn educational sides of professional jobs that they could have potentially one day.
So it's very much like the rest of the fair on any other day, just
toned down, make it a little more user-friendly for anyone that has special needs of any range. So we make sure we kind of fit all those needs and they can still enjoy the fair.
That's truly incredible. Yeah. I don't recall this before. Has this
been
in place before?
It's been around for a while. We just haven't advertised it as publicly because we have to cap a certain number.
Okay, now I see that there's also going to be a dinosaur exhibit. This should be different than the live petting zoo in that they're not live anymore. The dinosaur exhibit, what is going on here?
There's going to be a virtual reality section in the dinosaur exhibit where you can experience what it was like when dinosaurs roamed the earth. There's going to be different dinosaurs on display that are animatronics that the kids can take pictures in front of. And each dinosaur has a different movement that goes with how it would have walked or would have eaten back when they existed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I suppose in the virtual world, you can't get stepped on, can you?
I would hope not. It could. You never know.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's leave that aside for a moment. There are also several contests.
So the different contests we have, we start advertising them about 4 months prior to the fair opens. And we have started already collecting several of these items, like the photo and the home arts. We've already started collecting them, and our judges have already started judging them. And the winner will get announced the opening day of the fair. We also put all of these things that we've collected in these contests on display so everyone can see what people have done and show off their work and the amazing forms that they bring.
Okay, and then the baking contest, I could only presume you haven't been collecting and saving items.
No, not yet. The baking contest happens the weekend before the fair opens, and okay. We have judges that will come in, and they'll judge. They have a certain criteria that they're looking for the different types of baked goods that will come in. And then, again, the winner will get announced on May 1st.
Okay, cool. Now, we mentioned National Orange Show's Got Talent. That is a Saturday event, but there's going to be on all 4 days, four stages, a variety of musical acts throughout these 4 days. Can you tell us a little bit about where is this? How does this differentiate from one of the other, I guess, buildings or sites within the fair? It's a big complex.
Sure, it's a very large complex, and we have four stages that will be active all 5 days of the fair. We have our main stage that will be located by our lagoon. We have our Valleyland stage that will be hosted all of our community acts, so bands, dance groups, singers, other various performers. We have a stage inside of the Citrus Building that is geared for school-age children acts. And then we also have a stage inside the Orange Pavilion that will be full of different community acts.
And there's a variety of different bands. I mean, we're talking about rock and country and I don't know what
else. Yeah, we try to hit all the different genres. This year, we're going to have a steel drum band come in on Saturday in the Valleyland stage. That's going to be a lot of fun. You got to check that one out. We have a local band that their students used to be here at San Bernardino Valley College on Sound Sunday. They're going to be there as well on Saturday. We have several dance groups that are coming in. Carol Lee's Dance Studio has been around for many years, and we keep inviting them to come out. Their students are amazing. The parents are so helpful. We love working with them. The Multicultural Dance Center will also be there as well. This will be their sixth year there. We really enjoy getting to have all these community acts come together and give them a chance to perform.
Now, that really caught my ear, I have to say, the Multicultural Dance Center. What can we expect from them?
They offer a large variety of different cultural styles. So they're going to be bringing hula. Okay. They're also going to be bringing Chinese fan dancing. They'll also have some of their contemporary dances that they're going to do from different areas of the world this year. So they're going to bring acts from Asia, styles in French technique to your Russian technique to more traditional stuff that we find here in America. So there's going to be a large variety from that group. It'll be really good. We're really excited.
Wow. I'm going through this list, and we've covered a lot of it, but there's a couple of things that have also caught my eye. There's a train exhibit, also Vernardo's Circus.
Yeah, we love Vernardo's. Vernardo's comes back every year. They're such a great group. This is one of the circuses that does not have animals in their different acts. And so right. They fill the different acts with, they have clowns, they have contortionists, they do different music. Last year they did one that kind of revolved around bringing the world together and kind of bringing everyone, encompassing and opening up our arms to everyone. And it was really good. So we're super excited to see what they're going to have this year.
Nice. And the train exhibit?
Yeah, the train exhibit will be in the same building that the dinosaur exhibit is going to be in the Domus building. And we have several groups that come out and bring a whole, like, city of trains. And the kids love getting to see that and getting to hands-on some of the exhibits. These groups come in and they build a whole town, and it's all miniature structures. It's really neat to see that put together and set up.
This goes beyond your typical train set. Even the folks that have them going throughout the entirety of their den or basement or whatever, this is going to be half of a warehouse.
Yeah, pretty much. It's so exciting. There's ones where they have everything from a section of little farmlands to little industrial lands. Everything that trains have been a part of throughout the history here in America, they celebrate that in their little mini structures that they'll do.
One of the few things that I didn't really touch on, and that's volunteer opportunities, because I'm sure as the days get closer and closer, you're never really going to be done.
Oh, no. Yeah. No,
so
no.
I would imagine you would still be taking volunteers and assistants
at any point. All the time, yes. We're still putting things together right before gates open opening day. There's always those last-minute things that have to get done, and there's so many different moving, working parts that we need volunteers for. So anyone can volunteer. We ask that they be at least 14 and older to participate in volunteering. We get a lot of community service hours that need to be filled, so they come to the fair and help us out.
And how does a person get in contact with you to become a volunteer?
They are more than welcome to go to our website at nosevents.com, and there's a section for the fair, and there's another tab for volunteers.
Okay. They just have to be 14 and...
Well, and willing to help.
Okay.
And excited to help. Yeah, we love all of our volunteers. They are what make the fair so successful, to be there. We have them anywhere from our information booths to our kids' corner. They help out in Sunshine Day and our Military Appreciation Day. We have a lot of volunteers that help out for the parade to make sure it runs smoothly. Every car is in order. Every group is in order. And it's so exciting to see how well they come together. We even have a lot of groups that will come in and help us put together citrus displays or help us put up the different decorations and all the other little things that have to get done right before fair opens.
One of the very few things that I didn't touch on is the citrus displays. One, this is such a huge, was and is such a huge citrus area. And two, it's the National Orange Show. So there's citrus all the way around this. What are some of the citrus displays? What will we be seeing?
We have several that are going to come from San Bernardino Valley College. The architecture department has designed some really neat designs, so we're super excited to see what's going to happen with that. There's various businesses throughout the city that are going to have one as well. We have several Chamber of Commerce that will be participating in a citrus display. The fair started out as citrus vendors coming together, and so this is kind of our way to represent that and still get in touch with our history here in the Inland Empire.
Today's fair, this National Orange Show Fair, we're, I guess today, look at it as like a carnival that's just blowing through town or that opens up once a year here in town. But this actually has historic roots.
It does. Yeah, this is the 104th fair, and it started out as citrus growers coming together. They'll sell their products, or they have discussions on, you know, how can we make this particular citrus plant grow better in this area, or what can we design? Can we make up a new type of orange or a lemon or a lime or come up with a different type of nectarine? And it all started out as kind of like a farmer's market, similar to that. But then it just kind of grew more and more, and people bring their family. And so they wanted to get stuff for the kids to do and entertain them. And it just kind of grew into this beautiful fair that we have now.
Wow. And you said 104 years.
104
now.
Years. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
And we have a little joke. Every year, it always has some kind of rain, whether it's sprinkles, whether it's a downpour. But we've been making it rain since 1911.
Nice.
Every year.
Rebecca Ward on the committee for the National Orange Show Fair. And again, that's coming up quite soon.
May 1st through the 5th.
And one more time then with the website for more information, to volunteer for tickets, most importantly.
Yes, if you go to the National Orange Show Fair website, it's www.nosevents.com.
All right. And is it a daily admission, or can you get a pass that would cover you for all of the days?
It's a daily admission.
All right. Very good. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate this.
I'm excited, and I'll see you guys at the fair.
Yes, indeed. That was Rebecca Ward with the National Orange Show Fair, May 1st through the 5th. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Just ahead, the Emperor's Nightingale at the Lewis Family Playhouse soon. First, though, as we approach the end of Autism Awareness Month, here's Lillian Vasquez with something rather special.
You know, thanks, David, so much for the opportunity to talk a little bit about our autism initiative and to really thank the public, our community, our listeners, our viewers, to say thanks for supporting the autism initiative here at KVCR. Throughout the month of April, we have had businesses from breweries to restaurants to salons, Les Schwab, and many of their locations here in the Inland Empire have been supporting it. But basically, the community has supported this and embraced it. And it's where people have been in a business, purchased a puzzle piece, signed their name, or colored on the puzzle piece and posted it on the wall. It's created so much awareness And we're very grateful for the community supporting the Autism Initiative. This month, we also had the Autism Walk that was held at Valley College. We had a great turnout. Many dignitaries and many families gained so much more information and were just part of the walk and the collaboration and the team building for families looking for other families that are like-minded and going through the same different circumstances. And then, of course, David, I want to thank you so much. You've been to many of the businesses, especially the breweries, where we've had the opportunity to have you draw your Sharpie tattoos. And this has been really popular. So many individuals in the different breweries got really creative or allowed you to get creative on their arm with maybe dragons and fish and koi and puzzles. And puzzle pieces were in every one of your drawings. So it was really creating the awareness of autism. Now, the month is not over. We will still be at a couple of more locations through the end of the month. So if you can, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/autism and check out all the businesses that are supporting us during this Autism Awareness Month. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you all for supporting it. You know, we really create awareness during the month of April, which is Autism Awareness Month, but we know that autism is something that affects families all year long. This particular project was Coloring for the Future of Autism, which we were using to raise money to create more programming, documentaries, more information. I want to explain that we also get out into the community. We visit schools. We share with them what autism is, try and introduce children at a younger age about autism and how they can learn and help and be kind to someone with autism. We do training for law enforcement and first responders, going to their businesses and their police departments and fire departments to teach the first responders how to respond to someone with autism. So I'm very grateful that KVCR has embraced the Autism Initiative. Right now, the station has two initiatives, our Veterans Initiative, which will be kicking in gear quite soon, and our Autism Initiative. We feel like this is serving two populations that perhaps are underserved, and so pleased that KVCR management has allowed us to provide these two initiatives to our community. So thanks so much.
That was KVCR's Lillian Vasquez. More at kvcrnews.org/autism. Another resource is the Autism Society Inland Empire. They're at ieautism.org. I'm David Fleming with you for KVC Arts. Let's go now to Murray Heppner with Main Street Theater Company in Rancho Cucamonga at the Lewis Family Playhouse. There are actually different happenings at the venue, so before talking about Emperor's Nightingale coming up soon, I asked Murray to sort it out for us.
So okay. The Lewis Family Playhouse is the venue, which is a 550-seat theater that's owned and operated by the city of Rancho Cucamonga. Within that building, we have several initiatives, all of which are under the auspices of the city and the Community Services Department. So Main Street Theater Company is the professional union theater company geared for young people and their families. There's a presented series, which is visiting artists that we invite to the Playhouse, usually one-night events. Those are the concerts, the dance performances, the comedy. There's a community theater, the Rancho Cucamonga Community Theater. And then the offshoot of the community theater is another program called Broadway at the Gardens, which is a little bit more higher end than the community theater, but similar in what it does. It's just that the shows are less family friendly than the community theater shows. The Black Box, which we haven't done in the last couple of years, is also the community theater, but not on the Lewis Family Playhouse stage. It's in what we usually use that room as a rehearsal studio. So it's a small space. It seats 60 people when it becomes the Black Box. Again, it's the community theater doing smaller plays with smaller casts and maybe different kinds of stories.
Okay. I guess more intimate settings.
Yes, absolutely. More intimate, yes.
I used to really love the intimate stuff, the Black Box theater type stuff, where you're really this close to the audience.
Yeah, it's a very small
room. To the microphone.
It's a very small room.
Nice. We're going to be speaking primarily about The Emperor's Nightingale. This is running May 4th through the 19th. It's a Hans Christian Andersen tale. We would know him with The Emperor's New Clothes, The Little Mermaid. That may be the biggest, at least of recent years, thanks to, I guess, was that a Pixar thing? The Ugly Duckling and whatnot. This, though, The Emperor's Nightingale, this is an adaptation by Damon Chua. Talk to us, if you would, first about the original storyline by Hans Christian Andersen.
Right. So the original story was set in China and was written by Hans Christian Andersen, as you say, who was Danish, who had never been to China. So it's his kind of version of what China was. And the basic story is about a king who has a relationship, I guess, with a little bird who sings beautifully. And she comes and sings for him, and it makes him happy. Then he gets a present of a mechanical bird that is the same all the time and doesn't have other opinions. And so he is distracted and convinced that the mechanical bird is better than the real one. Eventually, the mechanical bird breaks down. The emperor gets really ill. They all think he's dying. And the real Nightingale comes back and sings for him and makes him better. That's the original story.
Why was there a mechanical bird put into place of the real one?
Because it was more beautiful. The bird in the original story was not a pretty thing. It was a tiny little brown bird. Even though it sang beautifully, it wasn't beautiful to look at. And so the mechanical bird was full of jewels and very gilded. And so people liked it better. And it was also, I guess, more reliable, right?
Okay,
it didn't have
okay.
opinions. It just did what it
oh,
did.
Yeah.
It sang the same song over and over and over and over.
Wow. Now I'm seeing that. Next to the Ugly Duckling, I wonder what Hans experienced as a child, if he, oh gosh, I mean, he has close to 2,000 stories, if I remember correctly. It's 1,700 and some odd stories. We know a handful. I'd like to explore the rest of these and see if that theme keeps on coming up. So the original storyline, that was set in China.
His made-up version.
Fantasy.
Yes.
The adaptation, this is also set in China.
Yeah, the Qing Dynasty in the 18th century. It's set in 1723, actually, very specifically. And Damon told me he was the first Asian playwright who ever adapted this story. So he was very mindful of trying to set it in a very specific period in China. This was a period that he knew very well. And he based it on a real king in the 1720s who did compete with his brother for the throne, not in the same way as his play. His play is fiction, of course, but it is very much based on a real king who, as a child or as a teenager, was arrogant, didn't have a lot of wisdom, and grew into becoming a great leader, which is what this play is about.
Is it about finding oneself, or is it because in this case we have the emperor and he has the two sons and they should show him which one deserves to be the new emperor?
Yes, correct. So the emperor decides that he's going to have a competition with his two sons for them to learn as much as they can about the kingdom so that he can decide who is best to be the ruler. And so the sons each have to learn as much as they can about the kingdom. So one of the sons, who ends up becoming the emperor, his mother introduces him to a nightingale, a bird, a magical bird that lives in the forest. And she flies around and tells this prince about what's going on in the kingdom. Now, the nightingale has her own agenda in a way. She is seeing the hardship of the people. And the princes are in the palace and they don't know what's going on in the kingdom. They don't know about the hardships and the floods and the peasants having no food. And so she's trying to get the emperor to do something for his people. The other brother, instead of going out into the world, he works with the prime minister, who is a little bit unscrupulous. And they get the help of the Europeans, the Italians, who are coming into the kingdom, making maps and learning more about the kingdom than the people that live there. And so the conflict is, who's a better leader? Is it better to work with your enemy and kind of cheat? Or, as the prince eventually learns after a lot of time, is it better to go out into the world yourself, not just take what you hear from others, but to see with your own eyes what's happening and lead by example?
Nice.
So in our story, the prince also gets distracted by a mechanical bird. There's a beautiful box with a nightingale on it, a mechanical one. But in this case, there's a hidden storyteller inside of it. The metaphor, really, of that box is a lot of what kids do today is they're watching the box, right? It could be the screen or an internet or video games, and hearing stories secondhand. And again, not going out into the world and seeing what's really going on. And the prince eventually figures out that the box is not the truth. And so he does go out into the world and helps his people, which is kind of the whole point of being a leader.
I have to say it's easily been decades since I read this story, and I'm hearing more and more and more lessons of life. Is it a morality story? Is it?
I think all of the plays that we do at Main Street have messages for children, well, and the adults that come with them, of course, that are positive, that teach them something. So we try to teach empathy. In this case, yes, we are. We're teaching children to think about what it means to be a leader. What does a leader need to have? And is it better to cheat or is it better to see what's happening? And I think that's a wonderful lesson for today and for always, for kids to see the difference between is winning the answer or is it how you win that's important, not just cheating or getting the answers from someone else.
Excellent. Well, now I understand this is a West Coast premiere before we go further.
Yes.
So how long has this adaptation been around?
So Damon wrote the play in 2015, 2016.
Oh, okay.
It was premiered in 2016 in Washington, D.C. It was done this past fall in New York. There was one other production, I think, in Minnesota, and we're the fourth ever. What's cool about our production is that the other productions were very traditional. The play has a lot of traditional Chinese elements in it, different kinds of poetry and music. And what we're doing is adding a little modern touch to it with his blessing. We're kind of mashing up the traditional Chinese music and movement and adding a little bit of hip-hop.
Okay, good. I'm so glad you brought that up, because there's traditional Chinese images and sounds, but namely the Nightingale's dialogue, and this is sipai, something akin to rap. Now, I just read this. I know
nothing
about it. Sort of.
So sipai is a poetry form. It's a very specific meter, and I don't have it in front of me, so I can't tell you, but just like iambic pentameter, in Shakespeare has a specific meter.
This
has a very specific type of meter. So the Nightingale, she's rapping, but she's using the rhythm to tell the story. There is a rap later in the piece. It's kind of a cross-talk rap that is also written in verse, not the same meter, that the two brothers do as their competition. So yes, it sounds a lot like modern rap in the way that he wrote it, but also the poetry is very specifically Chinese meter. Same with the music, where we have original music being written for us by Howard Ho, who's our composer, and he is kind of uniquely qualified for this. His grandfather was a Chinese opera singer, and he's a musician, so he's using traditional Chinese instruments, but again, also adding this kind of rap beat underneath it, so it's this kind of wonderful mashup. And the show isn't written to be a musical per se, but because there's so much music in it, it feels like a musical.
Sure, right.
Yeah.
You mentioned Howard Ho with the original score. Will there be musicians there, or is this assembled and then piped in, for lack of a better word?
Yes, because of the complexity of the music and the fact that he's writing it as we go, and we only rehearse for 10 days, the music will be recorded, and some of it will be sung a cappella, but there'll always be some sort of a beat under it.
Okay. Yeah. One of the things that I read in there, this is an equity cast, and so that translates into union. Is this locals then? Is it a troupe that was assembled elsewhere and then brought to the venue?
All of our Main Street Theater Company productions are union companies, not just the cast, but also most of the creative teams as well. And we audition for every show, so this is totally us. So most of them are based in Los Angeles, the greater LA area, and they commute to work just like we all do, to Rancho, to the theater. They're not local to the Inland Empire necessarily, but they're local to the LA area, and all of our creative team as well. They're all very well-known theater artists in the LA area. Tim Dang, our director, was the artistic director at East West Players for 20 years. He's now freelancing, and we're really lucky to have him kind of helming this project. And I'm really proud of the fact that our entire cast and the majority of our creative team are Asian American artists, which is pretty rare, not just for us, but for theater in general. And I'm really proud of the fact that we gathered such a wonderful team to put on the show.
I noticed that. It's color-conscious casting. That's a euphemism. You're not having any white folks putting special makeup on trying to be an Asian.
Correct. Damon was very specific about that in his script. And that's just one of the things he does in general when he writes plays. He's written many other plays besides this one, that he creates roles for people of color on the stage, which is something that he's very insistent about.
That is phenomenal. Yes, you mentioned the East West Players, and now he's the producing artistic director emeritus. But this is the longest running professional theater of color in the U.S., I read.
Yes,
no
that's
real
true.
Questions about that. I just wanted to point that out. This is really cool. This is an opportunity for you guys at the Lewis Family Playhouse, but for folks to come see. Now, one of the other things that you mentioned about the traditional with modern elements, I would like to say I don't want you to give anything away, but I think I do. There's going to be some Chinese calligraphy projected onto scenery, and it will seem quite traditional, but there are some hidden surprises for a modern audience. I don't want you to give it all away, but what kind of thing are we seeing?
So here's what I'll say is that in the script, there are Chinese characters that kind of announce each scene. We will be projecting them on a screen. Each character is kind of using a oversized calligraphy brush that makes it look like they're painting them onto the screen. So without giving too much away, our lighting designer, Brian Gale, is adding a little extra special things, not for every type of calligraphy, maybe, but definitely for the rap battle, the scenery that looks very, very traditional might start looking a little bit more like you're at a hip hop concert.
Okay, cool. So this is the Emperor's Nightingale, again, May 4th through May 19th. Since it is an adaptation, now, through our conversation so far, it sounds like it, but will people who are intimately aware of the original tale still be able to recognize it?
I think they'll recognize parts of it. Certainly the themes, a lot of the themes are still there. The difference in this adaptation is that the protagonists are the two boys, right?
Okay,
so it's the competition that's different from the original story. The Emperor kind of starts it off, but it's not really about him. It's more about the two boys and how they compete to become the next emperor.
Okay. We spoke about some of the calligraphy. We spoke about various traditional elements with a modern flair to them. Talk about the costuming, for example.
Yeah, so our costume designer, Jojo Su, is doing something really wonderful. She's using the traditional 18th century Chinese silhouettes, but everybody's also going to be wearing sneakers and kind of jogging pants so that they can do the choreography. Our choreographer, Tom Tai, is a breakdancer, and that's his kind of tradition. So he's also marrying traditional Chinese movement. We have a lion dance. Performed by a tiger. That's right. So we have a traditional lion dance costume that's been painted now to look like a tiger. So all the silhouettes are 18th century, and yet they're kind of, again, given a little bit of a hip-hop flair with sneakers and jog pants so that they can do those breakdance kind of moves.
And now I know that at one point, anyway, this tiger would have been played by two people, one at the head and one at the tail. Is that what you have going?
And the tiger in this story is one of the animals that are also part of the landscape. So the tiger is played by two actors. One's the head and one's the tail. They're pretty funny. There's also pandas who speak in the play. And the animals are great because they comment on what's going on in the story. They're also a part of it, but it's also comic. You know, they're funny. And I think the kids are going to have a great time with the tiger and the pandas.
Are the pandas in big panda costumes? Is it handled with makeup?
I don't want to give it away, but you will know that they're pandas. Okay. They're wearing hoodies that look like pandas.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And they gossip a lot, and they're really fun. They eat bamboo.
I was about to be snarky now, so they ate bamboo.
They absolutely do. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Marie, are you specifically with Main Street Theater Company?
Yes. I'm the artistic producer of the Main Street Theater Company. Again, Main Street is under the auspices of the City of Rancho Cucamonga's Community Services Department, which runs the whole Lewis Family Playhouse. But I'm specifically involved with Main Street. I do all of it, from picking the shows to inviting all the artists and kind of guiding the process.
I've been speaking with Marie Heppner, Main Street Theater Company. So just to wrap, the best place for more information?
LewisFamilyPlayhouse.com.
It's easy enough. Marie, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate this.
Thank you. It was fun.
Again, LewisFamilyPlayhouse.com for more information. That was Marie Heppner with Main Street Theater Company. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks once again to Murray Heppner and to Daniel Jimenez. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Rebecca Ward, Sharina Wad, Andrew Caravella, Taylor Milliner, and KVCR General Manager Tony Papa. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Just go to kvcrnews.org. And thanks again.